Lowe's knows that saving is always top of mind, especially this season. That's why we've picked some great deals for early Black Friday. Get free select DeWalt, Kobalt, or Craftsman tools when you buy a select battery or combo kit. More tools? Why not? Plus, we've got select pre-lit artificial Christmas trees starting at $59.98 because it's never too early to think Christmas. Get Black Friday prices without the crowds. Lowe's, we help. You save. While supplies last, selection varies by location. At Lowe's, this Veterans Day and every day, verified military members, veterans, and their spouses get automatic silver status in MyLowe's Rewards with free standard shipping, plus 10% off eligible purchases with no annual limit. It's one way we honor and give back to those who have served and still do. Learn more now at Lowe's.com/military. 10% discount can't be combined with another offer. Exclusions, terms, and conditions apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.
Welcome back to Travoltine Presents Easy Riders, hosted by Jeff Sweeney and Stuart Elmore, covering Simone. Enjoy the episode.
Hello, Stuart.
Hello.
It is me,
Jeff.
J3FF.
J3FF.
Yeah. Call me Dreef. I am your simulated podcast host.
Jeff, what is the weather in Stockholm right now?
The weather in Stockholm, Sweden, is calculating. Ma. 73 degrees and sunny. Oh my God, I'm dropping the bit. All right, enough of J3FF. Maybe we'll come back later. Folks, that's right. We're talking about a kind of topical movie this week.
Do you have the prep before we started?
Or was that was a free riff.
That was a free riff. Okay.
Thank you for listening to our episode on Zoolander last week.
Yes.
We're joining you this week for a movie that speaks through time.
Oh, yes, it does.
No. In all actuality, this is a movie that we've been curious about covering for a while, because neither of us had seen this movie before.
Yeah, none of us has seen it, but we both do the thing where we glaze through the filmography just to see, and we both clocked Simone. Yeah.
And we're like, this, it's a movie about like an AI actress.
Yeah.
And we're both like, that seems kind of topical for like modern conversation. This could be kind of an interesting rediscovery.
Yeah, I wonder what they're gonna. I wonder what at the time of 2002, what their ideas and thoughts were on this.
And then the answer to that question is, it really doesn't do much with that idea.
Not really.
Yeah, it's not really about an AI actress.
The more topical bits about this movie aren't what's on the screen. It's more like the little bits that happen off screen.
Yeah,
that will be interesting to explain to the audience, and we'll get into that.
This movie, like Stuart said, came out in 2002. It's written and directed by Andrew Niccol, who you'll know as the writer of The Truman Show.
Yeah.
And the director of Gattaca.
Yeah.
Those were his two credits prior to this. This is kind of his blank check off of the success of those two movies.
Yeah.
He's like, he's a social satirist, is his, claim to fame.
Yeah.
Ostensibly. And this is his like big movie about Hollywood.
Yes.
And what an AI, like what a simulated actress could do to that.
Yeah.
And then the movie is ultimately just kind of like a cheap shot parody of like needy actors.
Pretty much.
It's kind of just, it's kind of just a movie about like Hollywood vapidity. It's not really about the like, what would it mean to have a simulated actress brought in?
No, it's not. It's not really that interested in that question.
Yeah,
it's more like actors and actresses have become so needy and so difficult to work with. What can we do to fix that problem? Yeah. But then the problem that we use to fix it ends up becoming just as much of a problem as we have in terms of the whole like replacing actors and work and like what's the art form. Not interested in those.
To me, like an interesting question with this is like, if you show me like an AI movie, hypothetically, and it's well done to the point that I have an emotional reaction to it. Is that a real, like, true emotion? That's like an interesting idea for a movie like this to discuss.
Yeah.
It is not interested in doing that. This movie's interested in, wouldn't it, what if there was like a simulated actress and everyone buys into it because Hollywood is already this like vapid, empty place. And it's really not, there's no difference.
Yeah, pretty much. And the guy that's like the creator of it, I should say.
Yes.
It is more affected by vanity.
Yeah.
Than any of these deep existential questions.
Yes.
It's his vanity that's the big conflict.
Yeah, it's a movie about vanity.
Yeah.
Which was somewhat disappointing, but also like, you know,
at the end of the day, I still kind of like was okay with the movie. Like I didn't hate it.
This is like your middle of the road. Like 5 or 6 out of 10.
I was gonna say, this is a gentleman's six.
A gentleman's six for you?
This is a gentleman's six. Cause like, I feel like I learned very quickly. It's like, oh, it's not going to like dive into the bits that I wanted it to. Jeff, you know, like the little thing for the audience and the plot here, but like when she wins an Oscar off of two nominations, by the way,
yeah,
she wins an Oscar off of two nominations. And the biggest, like emotional crux of that scene is that he forgot to simulate her to mention him in her acceptance speech. And that's the whole emotional turmoil. Yeah. It isn't the whole thing of like, oh, this is a fake actress winning an Oscar. Yeah. How do we feel about that?
And the movie almost kind of comes back around to the interesting point that we have when, when Winona comes back later in the movie.
Yes.
We'll talk about when we go in the plot.
Yes.
Where he's like having a moment of like, oh, you're like a real person, and it's, you know, the little imperfections that make like actors feel real to us.
Yes. Yes.
And I'm like, okay, here's some juice.
Here we go.
And then it's like, no, he threw her in the ocean, and Al Pacino just running around screaming at people.
And it's a whole murder investigation.
Yeah. I'm like, okay.
This movie does take an interesting twist.
Yeah, it makes quite a turn.
Yeah, it makes quite a turn that I found entertaining, but it definitely doesn't like go into the vibe that we're working on. Cause obviously like I think our audience is educated in this, but just to like say it because I like talking and hearing the sound of my own voice.
Yeah.
Like obviously like we're having these thoughts about the movie Simone because of the Screen Actors Guild contract renegotiations that transpired last year.
Yeah.
And the whole idea of like AI coming in and taking over actors and what that might look like, or for background actors and all those things. And so this movie having a similar like plot like in 2002, it does make you wonder, not so much about movie talk anymore, just the grand subject of it all. Like how long there were people thinking like, what if we replace actors with robots? Like that kind of conversation. I bet it's like as early as like the dawn of science fiction.
Yeah.
Like the moment like a science fiction film came out in 1950, I'm sure there were some schmuck who's like, God, these fucking actors, imagine if we just had robots do the role.
Yeah.
So like, it's not a new conversation whatsoever, but we're now getting to like a place where that's starting to.
Yeah. It's like starting to become an actual threat.
Yeah. An actual threat.
Yeah. And so there are questions that have to be discussed.
Yeah.
We're past the point of like, kind of like light satire about it.
Yeah. And this movie would almost have you in a very small way kind of feel like, this is like the director's voice kind of talking. It's like, careful actors, don't get too needy. Don't get too diva-ish because this could be a thing that replace you. Did you kind of feel
a
that
little
too?
Bit? Yeah.
It's a little bit like a little bit of a threatening act to the actors. It's like all you actors who are divas. It's like one day we won't need you anymore. Yeah. So stop acting like the way you are.
There's a movie that came out in 2013 called The Congress, starring Robin Wright. Mm-hmm. I have not seen this movie, but I'm aware of it, where she plays herself. And she sells her likeness to like an AI firm to use Robin Wright in movies.
Hmm.
And the movie is about like her discovering this like entire life that her fictitious self has lived.
Mm.
I haven't seen this movie, but it's like a lot of people have said that movie is very prescient about our like current point in a way that Simone isn't. And so I'd be very interested to watch The Congress and kind of compare it to this and what this is trying to say.
Well, the Black Mirror episode, Joan is Awful, is also the exact same premise of it. Do you know the premise of Joan is Awful?
I have not.
It's basically like this woman who's not an actress whatsoever, wakes up one day and finds that her life, like every decision she's making, because she's kind of like an awful person just in general, just like kind of a Karen, is being streamed in like a dramatized Netflix show played by Selma Hayek, playing Joan, but doing every little thing that she's doing. So like if we're having this conversation, the next hour an episode drops and it's us having this exact conversation. And she starts getting paranoid about like, where are all the cameras watching me do this? And you find out it's just an artificial intelligence thing. And then Selma Hayek, who's a real person in this universe, is also angry about it because she's like, why is my an artificial intelligence version of Selma Hayek doing these horrific things? I didn't agree to that. It's like, well, yes, you did. You signed this contract. And then it goes into this whole like other rabbit hole shtick about it all. It then gets a little bit crazy because then it's all about you are a simulation, simulating the other, the real Joan. And then it gets really fucked up. But
you know what ultimately a big issue that this movie has is that Simone is never actually an AI. She's like,
no, yeah, no, she's a duplication.
She's like
device.
Microsoft Sam.
Yeah.
With a body.
Yeah.
Where he just types words in and she says them.
Really good Photoshop. Yeah. I mean, like when you think about it, that is kind of what the threat of AI for actors is. Mm. It's not that like you put an actor in an AI actor in a movie and they come up with all the lines and blocking and all that shit. You do have to give them some prompts and then they act it out, but it's the AI that fills in all those gaps.
Yeah. I will say I'm holding out on Twitter still. I'm one of the brave souls who still has a Twitter account.
You mean X account.
As it gets increasingly worse on that website. But I'll never leave that place because you'll see some of the dumbest people you've ever encountered and feel really good about yourself afterward. but like if you're on Twitter, I refuse to call it X. It's stupid. There's like the following tab where it's just all the accounts you follow. And then if you swipe over into the For You page, it's like a wasteland.
Yeah.
Where it's like an algorithm trying to put things to you.
Mm-hmm.
And you get a lot of ads. And the only people who are still buying ads on X are like AI guys and right-wing influencers.
Nice.
So I get so many ads for those.
Nice.
But every AI video that I see on there is the worst thing I've ever seen. It's like not good is like, the problem.
It gives you a little bit of hope.
Yeah, we have time. Like, I'm like, this guy's like, look at this. This is my princess like cartoon that I'm making with AI. And it's the ugliest fucking thing I've ever seen.
I've always said, like, even when the Screen Actors Guild was going on strike for this, it's like, listen, like I think we're 5 to 10 years away from the technology. Five to 10 years. Not a long time.
Yeah.
That's not a long time. But voice actors, they have something to worry about right now.
Big time.
Have you seen all the fucking memes of Joe Biden and Barack Obama playing video games?
Of course I have. Honestly, even though if there's going to be like a valuable use of AI, that is it.
Barack Obama, Joe Biden, video games. This is worth it to the audience to like pull up here.
The only good uses of AI thus far have been the videos of presidents playing video games and the, God, what was that? Like the Homer Simpson concerts where he's singing like Limp Bizkit.
Oh, yeah. Or Patrick Starr.
Yes.
Patrick Starr doing all those things. I don't know why this thing is being a bitch a little bit, but.
But all, I mean,
sure, I can help
you. There you go.
Go ahead and invite me to your motorcycle club. What's your gamer tag?
Awesome. Thanks. My gamer tag is X the Bidenator.
All right.
Unfortunately, we got the fucking post-op van mission. I can't stand this shit.
Oh, damn it. Yeah, that is the worst one. That's the
The thing that AI can't do is capture people's speaking rhythms. It can do the voice, but it can't do the rhythms of communication.
Like,
that's not how Obama talks. That's not how Biden talks.
Right, yeah.
When Biden talks, he's like, folks, all right. So it's about the economy, and we're going to do it great. Like, he's like constantly shifting between, like, a yell and a whisper.
Yeah.
Enough about how presidents speak. I'm not going to get into it again.
Enough about how presidents speak, eh?
Yeah. Oh, Stuart.
But I think like art in terms of the AI whole conversation thing, like I just think like voice actors, I think should be worried right now.
Yes.
And we'll get into this like probably later down the road, but like there are especially like some like famous actors who have died, and there are conversations about bringing those folks back into other roles in movies, voice acting roles. And some of those folks have, like family members have spoken out about it. And like, what do you do? Like, what's your, well, let me ask you this. Like, I'm not going to give you an actor name because this would be a fun hypothetical to talk about in the future. But like, you know, just think like a really famous like actor who is really blown up in like the voice acting realm, and they passed away a while ago. Yeah. And
you're talking about Robin Williams.
Well, I didn't want to blow my load right there, but thank you. Okay. No, no, let's go there. Yeah. Let's go there.
I've seen Zelda Williams talk about this.
Yes. Yeah. What's your vibe on like, if the Williams estate consents to it? So let's start with that premise. Yeah. Let's start with that. The Williams estate consents to it because they'll get money out of it or whatever. Yeah. Fairly. They'll get paid fairly for it, whatever that looks like. Probably not even an achievable thing, but let's just say that for the hypothetical. We're to bring him back for like, I don't know, Aladdin 3 or some fucking thing.
Aladdin 4.
But like, but
King of Thieves erasure.
But let's go there where you think, okay, I like Robin Williams. I like the actor. I like his jokes and some of his stuff. I'm not going to lie and be like, I would be a little intrigued to see like what bastardization of a creation they would make out of using an AI Robin Williams voice.
My thing is ultimately like we, you know, death gives life meaning.
Yeah.
And things should be allowed to end.
Yeah.
And I don't mean that in like necessarily like a mean sense, but like I saw The Flash last year. I was one of the few who went. Because I was morbidly curious. A movie that at the end uses like CGI recreations of Christopher Reeve and Adam West. And it's like it's ugly. Kind of ghoulish.
Yeah.
I'm ultimately like there's like a certain degree of acceptability with like having like a CGI. Like I think what Rogue One did with Peter Cushing, where they just essentially use like a CGI recreation of his face as digital makeup on another actor's performance.
Yeah, I want to get away from the quality side of the argument.
Because, well, it's not about the quality. It's just like, I think there's trying to convince me that you've been able to make a new performance of this deceased person, I think is kind of ghoulish and evil.
Okay.
I think that's bad.
Ethically wrong.
Yes.
Morally wrong.
I think there is a place where, you know, and maybe I'm wrong about this and my views will change, but if you are using the likeness of a deceased actor as like, you know, essentially makeup for an actor to perform, there's potentially like a conversation to be had about that. But I do think overall, like trying to whole cloth digitally recreate a performance of a deceased person is wrong.
Yeah.
I would not be interested in it.
Yeah.
I don't want that. You know, give me a new actor's interpretation on this character. Or don't bring the character back.
And just have a new...
Do something else.
Do something creative. Yeah.
Do something creative. Do something new. I don't want to see a new movie with Frank Sinatra and James Dean. James Dean and Frank Sinatra gave us movies. We can watch them anytime we like.
Yeah.
You can buy a disc and it looks great on your TV. You can stream it. I don't need, you know, to see like a digital recreation of Frank Sinatra again.
Yeah.
We had time with him.
Yeah. And it's over.
Yeah.
That's why you got to cherish it while you have it.
Yeah. That's ultimately my like my view on the topic is like,
yeah,
I'm just not even interested in the conversation about like, if you tell me like, yeah, we're going to recreate Robin Williams in this movie. I'm like, okay, cool. I have no interest in that. I'm just not interested.
You wouldn't see it.
I wouldn't see it. Like,
yeah, morally, ethically, you just would. You would keep yourself out of it.
I would remove. I mean, like, if the movie's good, devoid of that, like, maybe I end up seeing it. But like, ultimately, I'm just opposed to that topic.
Yeah,
I think like, you know, Robin Williams, he doesn't have a say in how he's being used, and that's my problem.
And that's the key thing that I have with it is that where did the deceased actors get a voice?
They don't.
They don't.
They do quite literally get a voice, but they don't get a voice.
But they don't get a voice.
Yeah.
And that's where even I feel like even in the hypothetical, like if if the a family estate consented to like yeah. their dead loved one to be used for something, I would still be opposed to it because it's like you can't tell me there are yeah. other ulterior motives other than just like, well, it's going to make yeah. us money, you know.
The one interesting example of this
yeah.
is James Earl Jones, who is still alive, thank God.
Yeah.
Sold the rights to his voice to Disney to just use for Darth Vader.
Hmm.
He fully was just like, I don't need to do this anymore. I will come in and I will record with you for a few hours, just me saying things.
Yeah.
And then you have complete likeness to create an AI version of my voice.
And that's his choice.
And they paid him a lot of money for it.
And he consented to that.
And he consented to that.
Yeah.
And like, I still overall, I'm kind of like, maybe we just
don't move have on. James Earl Jones yeah. voice Darth Vader for 10,000 like, years.
Maybe we just move on from Darth Vader.
Yeah.
And maybe we can do that.
We can make something else.
Yeah.
We can make a better version.
I love Darth Vader. He's a great guy, you know?
Well.
He's a great guy. I know him back in 1997. But like, it was really fun when he came back for Rogue One and voiced Darth Vader for a few scenes. And then you go and you watch the Obi-Wan Kenobi show where it's the AI Darth Vader voice in that show.
Yeah.
And like, it does sound good. Like it does. It's pretty convincing.
And you have Hayden Christensen.
Yeah, and you have Hayden Christensen. But the
physically
whole,
performing.
But the whole time I'm just kind of like, I know this isn't really him doing this voice.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like, all right, well, like it sounds good, but.
It feels
like,
weird.
Like it's just like, who cares?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, these are all things that I wish this movie was a little more interested in discussing. To bring us back to the movie.
Yes. Yeah. Good segue. All these things that we're talking about, yeah. this movie does not shed a single yeah. light on.
And the reason we're talking about this movie today is, of course, because we're covering the films of Winona Ryder.
Yes.
Whose name we've only said once so far in this episode.
Where are we at context-wise for Winona at this point?
Winona, I mean, we're picking up after the run of Autumn in New York, Lost All Zoolander.
Yeah.
And you watch this movie and you see her role in it, and you're just like, this is a massive like drop off from where she was.
Yes.
Like the Winona Ryder, who was in Girl Interrupted, The Crucible, Alien, all that stuff, should not be playing this role in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like she's playing the parody of a famous actress.
Yes.
She's like the fifth billed person yeah. in this movie.
Yeah.
That like if her role is a lot beefier, then I could see her, you know, it would make sense for her to have this role.
But she has two scenes.
She's not in the movie much.
She's got two scenes.
Yeah.
Three, really.
And so you're ultimately like, it's a big like, wow, like we saw a really like precipitous fall from fall here.
Yeah. I mean, I'll just say this to the audience. Like we're coming back from a little bit of a break of recording and we have one more movie to cover after this in terms of our recording schedule. And both movies that I watched last night, just like I've almost forgot why I was watching those movies. Until I saw Winona in one yes. scene partway through. And yeah. I was like, oh my God, we're doing a Winona Ryder podcast. Yeah. Like that's how like yeah. small it's gotten.
Because when she appears at the beginning of this movie, I'm kind of like, oh, okay. This is
she's
like,
in it.
Yeah. She's in this movie.
Yeah.
And then she disappears for an hour.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, okay.
She's not really.
She's not really in this movie.
She's not really in this movie.
And it's not a small enough role where it's just like, oh, she did this as a favor to someone or like for fun.
No, she was on for multiple days.
She was on for a few days, but not a lot. And so it really does just come down to like, is this really like what the best she can get right now?
You know what I gather from the role? It's not that she was on for multiple days. It's even worse than that, Jeff. It's even worse than that. She was on for like one day. And then was off for 2 weeks and then had to come back and do one more scene.
Yeah.
That's when you know you've fallen so far when your schedule's that free.
Yes. Yeah.
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 Because you like, can't tell me they shot her back to back 3 days to get her scenes out.
No, because when she's like.
She's in like three separate locations.
Because like, what is she doing also around this time? Like, she was just in Zoolander for a scene.
Yeah. After this, she's in...
In 2001, the only other thing she did was she was in an episode of Friends.
Yep.
And then she does this and Mr. Deeds.
And in Mr. Deeds, she's also, like,
She's pretty beefy in Mr.
She's
Deeds.
She's pretty beefy in Mr. Deeds.
She's Adam Sandler. We'll talk about this next week for the Mr. Deeds episode, but she's Adam Sandler's like...
I haven't seen Mr. Deeds in so long.
She's the everyone's favorite Adam Sandler bit where he has like the most attractive famous actress ever as his wife, and he's wearing like basketball shorts and a t-shirt.
Love that.
Like the run where it was like Salma Hayek, Drew Barrymore.
Yeah.
And he's just like, hey, I'm Adam Sandler, you know?
Yeah.
But like she really shouldn't be in this capacity at this stage in her career.
And well, in next week we're going to talk about The Heart is Deceitful Above All Things, which I haven't seen yet. I hear it's interesting film, but she's uncredited as psychologist. Yeah.
I'm just
looking at the IMDb. I've not even seen this movie. We'll get into it.
There's a reason she's in that movie.
Oh.
There's a very, very big reason she's in that movie.
Okay.
That we'll talk about.
Well, let's talk about when we get to the episode.
Yeah,
I'm going to watch it right after we record this. So, like, you know, I'm pretty excited, though.
Yeah.
Like, I hear it's got some good subject matter to it.
You're going
to
love it.
Yeah.
It's not the most cursed movie we'll ever cover on this show.
Wait, what? anyway. Back to Simone. Because she is the start of this movie.
Yes.
She's what starts the movie for us. Should we just get into plot? Are we ready for that already?
Yeah, I think basically I summarize like the making. I do really quickly want to shout out.
Is there a Pacino quarter? Is there a Pacino?
I think we already did the Pacino corner.
With Little Richard?
Yeah. With King...
Is he Richard? Doing this?
Did you just say Little Richard?
Looking for Richard.
Looking for Richard.
I said Little Richard.
Little Richard.
Is he doing this and looking for Richard at the same time, or did he finish looking for Richard and then went straight to this?
No, this is several years after looking for Richard. Al Pacino at the time, this is like really in the turning point of Al Pacino's career. This movie comes.
Really?
Because like up through essentially, I would say the year 2000, Al Pacino is like top of Hollywood.
Yeah. Untouchable.
Like from, you know, The Godfather through Serpico, Dog Day Afternoon. I'm just summarizing some random ones. Cruising, Scarface, Dick Tracy, comes back to The Godfather, Glenn Gagan Ross, Heat. Like he's running the table for 2.5 decades.
Yeah.
And then this year, 2002, he does Insomnia and Simone. His last two big roles. And then the next year he's in The Recruit, he's in Geely, and he's kind of just doing like pops in to play the villain in an action movie and like will be in your low budget DTV movie for fun.
Yeah.
Run. Until he shockingly comes back in like 2019 with Once Upon a Time in Hollywood and The Irishman. And then Al Pacino's like cooking again.
Yeah.
But this is kind of like the tail end of the Al Pacino star run.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. He's got a great ass.
He's got a great ass. And you got your head all the way up.
Yeah.
But I do real quick want to shout out the guy who wrote the Wikipedia production tab for this movie.
Really?
Yes. Because not once does it mention Al Pacino, who's the main character of this movie. Can I read for you the production heading on the Wikipedia? Like Andrew Niccol's predecessor, Gattaca, Simone deals with themes of the problematic aspects of technological advances being used to attempt to attain perfection. Unlike the former, however, Simone was Niccol's first attempt at a comedic satire with lighter moments and over-the-top drama. Niccol's first attempt at non-satire had been the earlier and more successful The Truman Show. Pruitt Taylor Vince and Jason Schwartzman were cast as OB tabloid investigator Max Sayer and his shady-looking, particularly childlike assistant, Milton. This guy just like whoever wrote this is just like immediately goes for the jugular of Pruitt Taylor Vince, roasts Andrew Niccol's career. Like, I really want to shout that guy out, whoever it was.
Yeah.
If you're listening to this episode, email us, trolltingpodcast@gmail.com. Let us know why you did that to them.
I wanted to read this first like IMDb trivia bit because it's a good like segue into leading us into the real conversation that we're having. Man, you're downing that London Fog. Is it good?
It's really good.
Yeah.
You did a nice job.
You like it?
Yeah.
Okay. I can make you another one.
No, it's fine.
You sure?
Yeah, I don't need another.
Okay. That's in my tea era.
Your tea era.
Yeah. Meanwhile, I'm drinking an energy drink. After seeing the photorealism of the computer-generated actors in Final Fantasy, The Spirits Within 2001, the producers started to lean toward the idea of having Simone actually be a computer-generated actress. However, after heavy opposition from the Screen Actors Guild, claiming in so many words that replacement of actors in all movies would be the next logical step,
yeah,
the idea was scrapped. So, like, that's what I just wanted to say is, like, there's more, those interesting conversations we're talking about with, like, the whole AI aspect are more prominent behind the scenes, yeah, and not really on camera.
They wanted to make this movie and actually have her be like a computer generated actress.
Yeah. And also, like, and because when they didn't even do that, they wanted to like hide Rachel Roberts's, yeah, like appearance.
She's not credited in the theatrical run of this movie.
Yeah. It's Simone as herself.
She gets credited on the, like, the streaming and Blu-ray release, but
yeah. But like, they wanted to like pass off this whole thing as, yeah, like, no, we actually got a real like AI actress. Yeah. So when they couldn't actually do that for real,
yeah,
they wanted to market like they did that for, yeah, real.
And instead they cast a newcomer, Rachel Roberts, who goes on to marry Andrew Nichols.
Yes. Casting.
Yes.
Here's another one. In order to keep her role in the film a secret, Rachel Roberts worked on the movie under the pseudonym Anna Green, short for anthropomorphic green screen.
This movie, why go through all this effort if it's ultimately a con? Like, let's just go into the plot. Like,
yeah, yeah. Let's get into the plot.
Because, like, it's just the least interesting way to do this.
Yeah, so the movie starts off and
you either actually have to use an AI actress in the movie, or you just come out and say, yeah, it's an actress playing an AI. Don't try and, like, do this, like, fucking long con with, yeah, us.
So the movie starts and we're on a studio lot. The studio lot, which is where like 80% of the movie is going to take place, is on the studio, yeah, lot.
Yes.
You see Al Pacino kind of running around.
Probably shot for very cheap.
Well, I was going to say, it's like this movie's got like 5 locations.
Yes. And most of them are on a soundstage.
Most of them are on a soundstage or a soundstage lot. And so Al Pacino's like running around frantically. It's like, oh my God, she's walking. And I thought, okay, is he an AD? Is he a production assistant? Yeah. Old man Al Pacino?
Oh, yeah.
But then you find out he's a director.
Yes. He's pulling all the red Sour Patch Kids or something out of the bowl.
It's the Mike and Ikes.
Mike and Ikes, that's
which,
it.
Which, you know, like, what that actually is?
Yeah, it's like the Van Halen.
It's the Van Halen, yeah, story.
They wanted all the brown M&Ms taken out.
Yeah. Which everybody thinks about that story at, like, as an example of how, like,
actors are overprivileged or celebrities are overprivileged.
Right. But if you look into the story, they actually just did that to see, like, how much.
If they read the contract.
If they read the contract. Yeah. Yeah.
That's, like, the idea here. But obviously, yeah, like, this is playing a parody of that and how actors are needy.
Yeah. And so Winona Ryder shows, yes, up right away.
Yes,
so
playing again, like Nicole, you and Nicola, like, Anders.
Nicole Anders, which is another like thing for Andrew Nichols.
Yes, it's just him.
It's just him.
Yeah. All right, buddy.
All right.
I get it.
So she shows up and first thing she says is, you're in breach of contract or whatever. And essentially the way the scene goes, juicy, nice.
Yeah. For the listener at home, I'm getting over a little sickness right now.
Yeah. Yeah, he is. I made him a nice London Fog tea.
Yeah, sorry you had to listen to that.
It's all good.
In your car ride to work. You probably have shut our show off and unsubscribed by this point.
Now they come for your sniffles, Jeff. Yeah. And so she's essentially saying, it's like, I am dropping out of this movie.
Yes.
And he's saying, like,
it doesn't make any sense.
It's like, no one understands the plot.
Yeah.
And he's like, and I don't want to do publicity for it. And, you know, Al Pacino's, like, begging and pleading. It's like, yeah, no, stay on the pictures. Like, I already sent out a publicity thing to it, yeah, that I'm dropping. And so, she makes a big deal of, like, you said this was going to be the biggest trailer on the lot. It's like, it is the biggest trailer on the lot. It's like, no, that one's higher.
Yeah.
And she's like, oh, it is higher by a few inches. I see that. Well, you know, it's the tires. The tires, yeah, are overinflated.
It's the tires. They're deflated. It
starts to deflate some of the tires.
Yeah.
The one thing I will have to say, I just have to say this, is everybody jokes about the diva-ness of actors.
Yeah.
Because there is a little bit of truth to something.
Yes. Yeah, of course.
That's all I want to say. Yeah. That's all I want to say. The only reason people make this many jokes about it, like, I won't have the audience believe it's like all actors are down to earth, real people. A lot of them are.
Yeah.
A lot of them are very sweet, amazing human beings, but there are some
divas.
There are some divas.
It is well documented.
Well documented, yeah.
I do like Winona in this scene, though. She's pretty funny.
I do too.
She's like doing a
Yeah.
She's doing a pretty good job of making fun of herself
for 5 minutes.
Yeah, for the 5 minutes that she's on screen.
Yeah, because then she walks out and leaves, and Al Pacino is without an actress.
Yes,
and then we cut to a preview screening room.
Yeah.
And this is where Jack Black turns around and shows him the map of Kong Skull Island. Yeah. 2003 King Kong. Fucking great movie.
It's a good movie.
3.5 hours long, but I'd sit through the whole
first
thing.
Andy Serkis as an ape movie.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Gollum before, but he's not an ape.
Yeah. Gollum is not an ape.
He's not I didn't say that. Just, yeah.
Yeah. Gollum is a hobbit.
He's a hobbit.
Yes.
Morphed hobbit, but. Yeah, so if you remember that scene from King Kong.
Sure, how do you feel about the hunt for Gollum? You hear about this?
I have heard about it. So is Andy Serkis directing
it? Yes, he's directing it and playing Gollum in it. Peter Jackson is producing it. It's basically seemingly that Warner Brothers like, we have the rights to Lord of the Rings. We must IP mine this. Peter Jackson, will you make another movie? And he said, no, I'll consult on it if you're really hell-bent on this. And they're like, let's just do a... Andy's wanted to direct a movie. Let's just fucking throw him a Gollum movie.
I we just said, let things die.
Yes.
Let things die.
Yeah.
We
got three Lord of the Rings movies. Warner Brothers. Perfect movies.
You're re-releasing the extended editions of the Lord of the Rings in theaters, like in a couple
weeks. Sure, do you remember the Lord of the Rings movie coming out in theaters this year? A new one?
A new Lord of the Rings movie coming
out? It's called Lord of the Rings, The War of the Rohirrim. It is an anime movie.
Oh.
That is coming out this December.
That doesn't count.
It is in the same world. It
doesn't count.
Eowyn is in it.
Okay.
But like,
whatever.
It's really bizarre what they're doing.
What did you think of Rings of Power? Did you watch it?
I watched the first episode. I got bored.
Yeah. That's the vibe. It's a boring show.
Yeah.
And they spent $1 billion on it.
Hilariously. The story of the Lord of the Rings rights. We got to cover someone who's in a Lord of the Rings movie just so that we can talk about the rights issues on those movies.
Yes, we do.
In which the Tolkien estate refuses to sell the Silmarillion. But they sold the Hobbit and Lord of the Rings books in like the 70s, and by some weird contractual obligation, it wound up being Warner Brothers's. And then they were able to make the Lord of the Rings movies. But then the Rings of Power people only bought the appendices, which is the second half of the Return of the King book. And so their show is based entirely off of the second half of the third book.
Because they use the names like Morgoth, which is in the similarity.
Yes, but it's in the appendices. Because the appendices basically is like a timeline.
Oh my God.
It's literally, have you read the appendices?
No.
If you go to Return of the King and you go to the end, it's like Frodo goes off to the Undying Lands.
My girlfriend's got it on her shelf. Yeah. But
yeah. Frodo goes off to the Undying Lands, and then there's like appendices one. And it's just like literally a history of Middle Earth summarizing all the things you've read about in these books. And they bought the rights to that. And that is what the Rings of Power is based on. They cannot mention anything that is not in those appendices. It's really funny.
And they spent $1 billion.
They spent $1 billion.
$1 billion.
Yes.
That's...
The show does look good. I will give it that. Like, it's clearly highly production value.
The score is really nice.
Yeah. They got Howard Shore to do one... Yeah. To do a track for it.
Mm-hmm.
Enough about Lord of the Rings. We'll talk about it one day on the show somehow.
You, me, and...
I'm trying to think who in those movies we could cover.
We talked about Ian McKellen.
We did talk about Ian McKellen at some point, which is a wild trajectory.
He would be an interesting one to cover.
Yeah, because he goes from like Shakespearean adaptation to becoming an action star in his 60s. The great Ian McKellen SNL opening monologue from when Return of the King came out, where he's up on the stage and like, so, you know, I was in the theater, it was me and Anthony Hopkins and Maggie Smith. And now people know her as the Harry Potter lady. Anthony eats people's faces, and I'm an action figure.
Yeah.
It's really good. Simone.
Simone.
Yes.
They're in the preview screen room watching one of the scenes of the movies.
Yes. Keener is the head of the company.
Which we'll later find out is his ex-wife.
Yeah, Al Pacino's ex-wife, who they have a kid together with.
Yeah. And they're watching a scene from the movie that he's currently working on.
Yes.
And it's got Winona Ryder and...
Some guy. We don't even have to go into it. He is some guy.
Jay Moore playing Hal Sinclair.
Cool. Good for him.
Doesn't matter. Does not matter in the slightest.
Yes.
And so it's this little... And you get the idea that he's like a... Al Pacino's playing Victor Taransky.
Yes, who's like an art house director.
And he's supposed to be like a Tarkovsky-esque guy. Because his movies are very much like...
His movies look like shit.
His movies look like...
His movies look terrible.
Movies look like terrible, yeah. You know? Like Tarkovsky's movies look terrible. I'm just fucking kidding. I wanted to see who would jump on that. Yeah. I wanted to see who would eat me alive. No. Trial me at the Hague.
His movies just look like... It's clearly intended to be a parody of like a bad art house filmmaker.
Yeah. Yeah.
But like he shows off the clip and they're like, we got to scrap the movie. There's no way we can finish this without Winona.
Yeah.
And he's like, let me figure it out. We'll recast. And they're like, nope, we're going to pull the plug unless
you get a name actor. And it's like, we'll do a no name actor. And it's like, we can't sell this off of a no name actor, which is funny because they end up selling this movie on a no name actor,
and so
we'll get to later.
He gets fired from the studio. Victor Taransky.
Oh, yeah. Because he's cleaning out his...
He's cleaning out his office.
Oh, well, he's not cleaning out his office. He's stealing the negatives.
Yes.
The reels of his
He's going to go finish the movie on his own. He, like, mortgages his home.
Yeah. But in the middle of the night, in the studio...
Yes.
He's getting all the negative reels. And then who comes out at him?
Elias Koteas.
Elias.
We talked about him in Lost Souls. One, a big Jeff actor. Like... We talked about this, like top tier Jeff Self character actor. Yeah. Just like stumbles out of a hole in the wall with an eye patch.
With an eye patch.
And is like, hey, it's me, Elias Koteas. How are you? How are you doing?
His name in the movie is Hank.
No, it's Elias. He's like, interesting. I'm like, what? It's really weirdly meta. But no, his name's like Hank. Hank Aleno.
Hank Aleno.
He's like, I got this thing that I've been working on. I'm going to die. I got the tumor's inoperable.
The tumor's in my eye. It's inoperable. Yeah. You remember that conference we went to many years ago?
Where I was talking about AI actors.
And he's like,
I remember you getting booed off the stage.
You got booed off the stage about replacing actors and stuff. But that technology was so far away. It's like, well, what if I told you I finished it?
Yeah.
And he's like, and this is it right here. And he's like, I don't know. You got to take it from me. Or else I'm going to die. It's like, no, thank you.
I'll call you next week.
Call you next week.
Maybe. He's like, and he's like, the tumor's inoperable.
I got a week to live. And then he leaves.
So he just leaves.
Yeah.
And then like we're at his house and he's on the phone. He's like, I mortgaged my house to finish this movie, but I can't get an actor.
The creditors are coming after me.
Yeah. And then there's a knock on the door. It's a good bit.
It's a good bit because like there's a knock at the door. He's a dude with a briefcase and a suit. He's like, oh no,
it's creditors.
He starts running. The dude's chasing
him. He's sprinting down the beach.
Mr. Taransky. And he's like, that's not me. I'm not him.
Sir, did you see the Rudy Giuliani thing?
Mm-hmm. That he's getting tried?
No, as of today, like yesterday, Rudy Giuliani was trying to be served a court summons by the state of Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
And he'd been like fleeing and hiding from it for weeks and they hadn't been able to find him. And at his 80th birthday party yesterday, a state marshal for the state of Arizona attended the birthday party, sang him happy birthday, and then served him his court summons.
That's fucking awesome.
But like they've been trying to find it. It's basically the exact same thing that happens to Victor Taransky where they hunt him down.
That's so great. It turns out it is not a creditor.
Yeah, it's the lawyer who's handling the estate of Hank Aleno.
Yeah, and he's like, he left you this in his will.
Yeah.
And you're like, what is it? I don't know. He looks at it. It's a hard drive.
Yes.
It's a disk hard drive.
Yeah.
2002 disk hard drive.
And so he just like clunks it into his computer.
And then it's just like,
Simulation 1.
Simulation 1.
Short for Simone.
See, like, that could have been something they could have gone with is what's Simulation 2 like? What's Simulation 3?
Simulation 3 is like an Al Pacino makes an AI of himself.
Well, that's the thing. It's like, if they're simulated actors, what are the simulated writers, simulated directors, simulated DPs? Like, that could have been like an
AI building off of AI.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
The singularity, is that what they call it?
Well, again, like in most AI movies where, you know, the AI gets too smart. And you said it yourself, Jeff, that Simone is not AI.
Yes.
And the movie even goes to show how much it's not AI. When she wins the Oscar and she doesn't thank him in the speech because he forgot to record it in, there was a sliver of a moment.
Yeah, where I'm like, oh, is Simone becoming sentient?
Yeah, is she becoming sentient? And it's not the case.
Yeah.
So this movie never wants to go near
that
subject. But anyway, the Simulation 1 boots up and this face morphs together.
Yeah.
And it's Rachel Roberts.
Yeah.
And like the most Microsoft Sam standby Like,
I don't know what they did to her makeup wise, but she does look simulated.
They did visual effects.
They put VFX over her.
Yeah, it's another IMDb trivia bit.
She looks plasticky.
Yeah.
Which is what you want.
That was intentional. Yeah. Which was good.
And he's like, ah.
Then he just starts, and then he unzips his pants. He starts jacking off.
It's crazy.
Just like, no, he doesn't do that. But that would, again, another crazy thing that would get really wild in this movie is he actually did form a sexual relationship with this AI artificial robot.
Be crazy.
Her.
But no, he doesn't, like, he uses the AI and puts her in the movie.
Yeah, he replaces.
And then he shows it to Catherine Keener and all of them, and they're like, wow, she's incredible.
She's incredible. Where did you find her?
He's like, I don't know. They hire him back. He's back in the good graces of Hollywood.
Yeah, and they release the movie. It's a big hit.
It's a huge hit.
Everybody's
going to see it.
Everybody's Simone crazy.
Yeah.
Simone fever.
Simone fever sweeping the nation.
And they're like, who is this Simone? We want to talk to Simone. And
au revoir, Simone.
Yeah.
Au revoir, Pee Wee.
And then and Al Pacino very quickly like kind of takes on this title as like Simone's handler.
Yes.
Because he's not...
It's actually crazy he doesn't get arrested sooner in this movie.
Right?
Because he's like, yeah, she's a recluse. She doesn't want to talk to anyone.
She's an agoraphobe.
Yeah, she's an agoraphobe. She lets the work speak for himself.
Yeah, doesn't want the fame and doesn't want the attention.
But she increasingly becomes more famous, and he makes a second movie with her in it. And like, it tells all the actors, like, yeah, you guys won't work with Simone. You'll work with a body double.
But then, she is on the phone to talk to you guys. And we get this like cartoony bit where it's
he's like running over the computer to type all the
And then he gets there and he starts like talking to the actors through Simone's simulation. He's like, just trust whatever Taransky says. Just do whatever Taransky, Daddy Taransky, tells you to do. Like, how did people not catch on to this sooner?
Yeah, and everyone's like, oh, it's crazy.
Because she's like all about Taransky.
Yeah.
But we should introduce the two Jamoke reporters.
Yeah.
Because he does a press conference and the reporters are like trying to figure out, they're trying to get to
They Simone. All want like the scoop on Simone. They want like, you know, the nude picture or the tabloid journalism.
Yeah, right. And so they're doing all this extensive research and there's like one
Pruitt, Taylor Vince, and Jason Schwartzman.
Yeah. Jason Schwartzman was who I saw. I was like, oh my God.
Yeah.
And
do you know who Prue Taylor Vince is? We've talked about him on the show before.
I'm sure we have. I don't care.
Well, he's in The Walking Dead.
Is he Otis?
I don't know who he is.
He gets shot by Shane. Yeah, I know.
He's in The Walking Dead. He's in a lot of things, but he's going to play Jonathan Kent in the new Superman movie. But we've talked about him before on the show because they said it was a heart attack, but I know that Angelo died of a broken heart.
Oh,
he's Angelo and Gotti.
He's Angelo and Gotti.
Yeah, he's Angelo and Gotti.
Oh man, how did I forget that? That's crazy.
He appeared on the screen.
I have no idea how I forgot about that whole thing.
My wife Becca walked out right as that scene was his first scene in this movie's playing, and she's like, "Why are you watching Gotti?" And I'm like, "It's not Gotti. He's in other movies."
Refuse to believe that. But yeah, they're trying to do all the scoop, and they're getting very frustrated because nobody's getting a photo with her.
Yeah.
And there's apparently all these different events that she's making an appearance in.
He's like poorly photoshopping her into other people's
and
photos.
And nobody's catching on to it. Like, it's just these two reporters that know that all the backgrounds are fake and unverifiable. But like, you think they would be the only ones who couldn't verify it?
But I do like how over the top this is.
Yeah.
Like, it's funny.
It's very funny.
Like, it's clearly trying to be a joke and it's succeeding at it.
Yeah.
But...
What do you mean the satellites didn't catch a photo?
Yeah. And so like Al Pacino's like, well, I got to bring her out into the real world somehow. And so he stages like a hookup between the two of them in a hotel.
Yes. With a body double.
Yeah. With a body double played by Rebecca Romaine.
Yeah.
And like people get photos of her and him walking together. And like, it's very clear that like he's holding her hostage and like they're sleeping together.
Yeah.
And he's becoming a tabloid figure.
And when the reporters go into the hotel room, they do all this bunch of fucking fingerprint dusting. And it's like, well, we found a lot of Taransky's fingerprints. We found a lot of your fingerprints.
Yeah.
But of her.
He starts doing like remote live interviews on like talk shows with her on a TV screen.
Yeah, because they're saying the second movie is going to tank if she doesn't market it.
Yeah.
And so they're like, okay, we'll get her an interview.
Yeah.
And he puts like this like Microsoft desktop desert background behind her. And she does an interview with, I don't know what the late night show.
Yeah,
she does it with some late night show. But the reporters who are watching is like, I know that background.
Yeah, I know that tree.
I know that tree. They go there.
And there's like a building in the background that wasn't there.
Yeah.
They're broadcasting. Like, it's a fake.
It's a fake background.
It's all a lot of business going on. Like this movie for the entire middle act is basically like a rinse cycle of Simone does an interview. The reporters find out like something about it. Al Pacino makes another movie. Simone does an interview for it. Reporters. Like, it's just this like constant cycle of the same things happening.
Yeah, I would say like the other tidbit that we get into is Catherine Keener, Elaine, is starting to get like feelings for Taransky again.
Yeah, she's falling back in love with him, even though she's like married with someone else now.
Yeah, I thought she was.
Yeah, she like just, that guy disappears halfway through the movie.
He does, doesn't he?
Yeah, maybe they killed him.
I don't know. Maybe he was a robot.
Was an AI too.
Yeah.
Oh shit.
Fuck. So. Which you could argue, like, the only reason she falls back in love with him is because he starts getting more fame and success based on his recent movies, but whatever. We won't get into that.
Yeah, this movie's about the vapidity of Hollywood.
Yeah. And so then, like, he does all this stuff where it's like he has to try to convince Elaine that him and Simone are not a thing.
Yes.
At one point, there's like a phone call in a car scene.
Yes.
Which was very funny.
It's a good scene.
Did you notice like when we cut to inside of the car that he's in with the mannequin, it's a mannequin. But when we cut to Elaine's side of the phone call and it cuts over, it's actually Rachel Roberts in the car.
Is it?
It is.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You can clearly tell because the mannequin's so much like paler and white.
Yeah.
And then when it cuts to Elaine's POV looking across the road at Simone driving... It's a real person.
That's fun.
But Rachel Roberts is obviously playing it like she's pretending to be a mannequin. Yeah. But there's a scene where she quickly like turns her head and looks over a little bit.
Yeah.
And she's got like a hood and sunglasses on, so it's covering a lot. But like it's very clearly like not a mannequin.
Yeah.
Like it's a real person. I thought that little tidbit was actually kind of good.
There's a lot of good jokes at this point in the movie. Pacino's like really kind of going for it and just like being crazy.
Yes.
And he's really anchoring the movie for me.
Yes, he is. And then so at this point, like so... Simone's been nominated for two Oscars for the two movies that she was in.
She's been nominated for Best Actress twice.
Yes.
Not even nominated for Best Actress and Best Supporting. She's been nominated Best Actress twice. I don't know if that is allowed to happen.
I was going to say, is that even allowed? And as if it is,
I actually don't think that's allowed. I think you have to choose what you go for in the category.
Yeah. You imagine Leonardo DiCaprio does five movies and he gets like
nominated for all five of them.
Yeah.
No, like actors have won Best Supporting Actress and Best Actress at the same time before. It's happened.
Who's done that?
Jamie Foxx, I believe, won.
No wait. Shit.
Who has won Best Actor and Supporting?
At the same time.
At the same time. Hey. Well, I'm not a... I can't find the exact... Okay, it has not happened. They have not won, but there have been nominations.
Okay, yeah.
Like Jamie Foxx, Scarlett Johansson, those are all people who got nominated in the same year for both categories, but no one's won both.
Yeah. So she gets nominated twice for Best Actress.
And for both of his movies.
And she wins. And obviously she's not...
She wins in a tie.
She wins in a tie, yes. And obviously she's not there at the ceremony. Yeah.
She's in a third world Goodwill tour.
Yeah. And they play a video of her acceptance speech. And she's thanking like the other co-stars. She's thanking the actors. Like she's thanking the Academy.
Yeah.
She doesn't thank Taransky.
And he's like, I forgot to ever say it. How could I forget myself?
And this is like supposed to be like the big like emotional crux of it all is that he forgot his own vanity.
Yeah. He's becoming like
lost.
So locked into Simone.
Yeah.
He's becoming Simone.
He's becoming more Simone than Taransky.
Yeah. She's like because he always says like he wants an actress he can completely control, which is like a little fucked up. When you think about it, but
well, we forgot that at the very beginning of the movie, after he gets fired, that there's this whole conversation with him and Catherine Keener. And it's basically him talking about, remember the old days when we control what the actors wear, we control what they put makeup. And I'm listening to this whole monologue. I'm like, yeah, that was
a bad time.
That was a bad time. That was pretty fucked up.
Yeah, it was bad stuff was going on.
Yeah. So I just thought of a really bad, dirty joke, but I won't say it. you can control the actors and everything they do.
Yeah. But hey. he And he's like becoming so lost into Simone.
Yeah.
And so he's like, I need to kill her, essentially.
I need to kill Simone.
And so he's like, first he decides to make...
You're good.
I'm good. He makes... She directs a movie.
With her like eating.
I am pig.
I am pig. I watched this and my immediate thought went to Nicolas Cage's Pig.
I'm looking for a truffle pig. I've heard that movie's actually really good.
Have you not seen it?
I have not.
It's actually really good.
I've heard it's quite good.
He's really good in the movie. It's a really good, serious performance.
Yeah. But
that trailer is just so funny.
Yeah.
I was with you at the music box.
Yeah, when that trailer played.
When like, that trailer...
And it, like, killed. The audience was losing it. But, and he makes I Am Pig, where she's like, oh, my God. Just find the line. Okay, like... Yeah, this is Simone's I Am Pig, folks.
I thought he was going to say it.
He didn't say it.
Oh, wait.
The pig has to get stolen for him to say
it. Here it is.
I'm looking for a truffle pig.
Yeah. That line killed in the theater.
Looking for a truffle pig. Yeah.
But I Am Pig is his, like, attempt to kill her career, but it becomes a success as like she's a daring actress who's crawling around with the pigs and eating shit.
And then she's known
as an avant-garde actress.
And so then he tries a different thing where it's like she goes on an interview and she's like looking slobbish.
Yeah, she's drinking and smoking and talking about how
we should have a firing range at the schools so the kids could learn how to defend themselves. Cigarettes are actually really healthy. Yeah. And she says a bunch of
evil stuff. And they're like, and the audience is just like, well, it's nice that she like, you know, is true to herself.
Yeah.
We also did skip that there's like a sequence where she becomes a pop artist and performs at the Hollywood Bowl. And then we never bring up her music career again.
Because like she's a hologram.
Yes.
Which I suppose that's something that we can discuss.
Yes.
That the fact that this movie called holographic
performances.
AI performances. Yeah. So Tupac.
Tupac.
And Michael Jackson. But like. Yeah, she's a holographic performance, and there's a bunch of smoke around her to try to like discern the whole thing that she's an AI, a hologram, and the whole thing. But yeah, so he's like getting a little bit hopeless, and he's starting to work on his next movie that Simone's already cast as like the lead actress. Winona
comes back
and
to audition for like the supporting role.
Yeah, and she gives him
which is kind of like a sad thing looking at when I was actually here at this time. Like, it's like, damn, she's doing these supporting roles. And then like she pops up in this, come back, and she's like, yeah, you know, this is the best I can get now with Simone taking over. And I'm like, oh.
Well, it's sad that like not only is she in supporting roles, but she's playing a supporting role as a supporting role.
Yeah, in a supporting role.
I'm like, oh man. Oh man, it's so sad.
But she comes in and she fucking crushes this monologue. And Al Pacino like has a fucking existential revelation. He's like, you have a line on your face. Not a bad thing. It's just an imperfection. And you're real. It makes you real. And he's like touching her face. And she's like, all right.
All right. This is weird.
Yeah.
And then,
it's honestly a great, good showcase for Winona.
It's a good scene for both of them. I feel
it's a great scene for both of them.
Yeah.
I feel like Winona enjoyed working with Al on Looking for Richard. And this is like a chance for them to work together again.
Yeah.
Might be part of the reason she's in it besides just where she's at in her career. But they do this scene together.
And he says it's like, you'd be great for the part. It's like,
you can have the lead.
Of the supporting role. It's like, because isn't Simone getting the lead?
And she's like, oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. She's getting the lead. This is where we start to go a little buck wild crazy. Yeah.
he fucking murders her. He kills her.
Brutally.
Yeah.
So what he does is he gets like a hard drive disk with... there's a Sharpie writing on it that says plague. Right. Oh, we forgot to mention like a really important bit that like where he controls Simone is on this big giant like
He has like this fucking massive sound stage where he just has a computer in the middle of it.
Yeah, it's like a Batcave-esque computer.
Yes. We also never see him filming a movie.
No.
We only see him AI-ing her into the movie.
He still has to film the movie.
The rest of the movie.
Yeah.
We never see that.
There's another funny bit.
They clearly just didn't have the budget for it.
We're forgetting a lot of little tiny bits in this movie.
Yeah.
There's a tiny bit where, like, Elaine is going through all the budgeting. It's like, what about wardrobe? She does her own hair and makeup. Transportation? She drives a set.
Yeah.
Wardrobe? She wears her own stuff.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, but stunt double. It's like, come on.
Does her own stunts.
It does her own stunts. Even the one that, where she jumps out of the plane? Yep. She's pretty daring. Okay. Just film that on the last day.
Yeah.
I thought that was really good.
That is a good bit.
That was a good bit.
But he's in this like Batcave-esque soundstage.
Yeah. Where he controls all of her and all that stuff.
And he inserts plague into the computer. He gets this inspiration because he visits Elias Codius's grave and is like, oh, you're dead. Maybe I can kill her too.
Yeah. That's literally the revelation.
He plugs plague in and it like erases her off the hard drive. And then he takes the hard drive.
And all the other hard drives that
puts
it
in like a crate, drags it out to his yacht, the SS Simone, takes that to sea and throws it overboard.
Dexter Bay Butcher style.
Yes. And then like,
it's like, I'm sorry, Simone. I'm so sorry.
Then he calls a press conference the next day and is like, Simone died in the third world of a disease.
Yeah. And then one of the reporters is like, did she suffer?
He's like, it was quick.
It was mercifully quick. And then he walks away.
Yeah. And then, of course, like the reporters look into it and they're like, oh, there's like video on a security camera of him dragging a fucking crate out to a boat and throwing it into the
ocean. Look at the way he fucking did this.
Yeah.
It's like the dumbest shit ever. He could have just like stopped using Simone.
Well, he didn't want the temptation, but also like, why did he have to throw it into the ocean? I mean, it is a funny bit. Like, it's clearly supposed to be funny.
But like,
he's clearly overthinking.
But the hole he dug himself in is so fucking funny.
And then he's like,
they're at the funeral.
Yeah, and he gets arrested.
And he gets arrested at the funeral because they open the casket and it's a cardboard cutout. He's like, what does this mean?
Oh my God. And he comes clean to the cops who don't believe him because why would you?
Right? Why would you? Yeah.
If he's like, no, I didn't kill this person. They're an AI. I'm going to start using that. I'm gonna get into that excuse.
I didn't kill them. They were AI. And he like he's fucking crazy. He even gets a lawyer and he's like, you should just plead guilty to murder. Mm. And go throw yourself to the mercy of the court.
Did you see the thing where they did a screening of Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning at the White House?
No.
And it inspired Biden to like investigate AI controls.
What?
And issue an executive order.
What?
Because that movie's about an AI that like takes over the fucking world.
No shit.
That's like a true thing that happened.
Wow.
Anyway. What we were just saying reminded me of that.
That is crazy.
Yeah, that is actually crazy.
So
he gets arrested and he takes them out to where he threw the thing overboard. And this scene's confusing.
Yeah, because the divers go and get the crate
and they pull nothing's it up, and there's nothing inside.
Yeah.
But it's like it was locked. I don't know how all the hard drives fell out of it.
And it's also like, did it fall out in the ocean?
Yeah.
Did
somebody? He's like, you got to go back down and find them.
It's like, I can't. There's sharks in there.
Yeah.
And that's where they think the sharks ate the body.
Yeah. And I'm like, well, how?
How?
This thing was locked. He has to unlock it.
Yeah.
How did it open? All the things fall out. At this point, I'm like thinking, oh, there's probably some like conspiracy. I kept expecting Elias Codius to come back.
I thought the reporters dug up the crate.
Yeah, I thought there was going to be like some grander conspiracy.
Yeah.
But no, it's just like a massive unexplained element of how exactly this crate opened up.
Yeah.
At the bottom of the ocean.
That part was confusing. It didn't bump me too much because I was so like enamored at the craziness of it all.
Yeah. You do kind of have to admire the gumption of this movie at this point.
Yes, you do.
Where you're just like, okay, they're really just going for it. This guy's going to get get the death penalty for murdering an AI.
Yeah.
But then Catherine Keener and his daughter
go into the soundstage
and they're just trying to find any evidence to help him out.
And this is not the first time Catherine Keener's been in the soundstage because at one point they were like, she's got to do press and we know she's in the soundstage. We need to talk to her. And they bum rush in and that's where they see all the computers.
Yeah.
And Al Pacino says it's a great line. Like, she is a computer addict. It's like, what do you mean? It's like, yeah, she's a computer addict and a horrible agoraphobe. It's like, oh, that makes sense why she's not like making all these appearances and stuff. So that's just to say, like, you know, she's in there and she still hasn't figured it out.
And then I'm not quite sure how the daughter
figures it out.
Figures this out.
I'm not sure either, because she finds the plague drive. She does, like, fucking
Lex in Jurassic Park esque. Because she's like, she finds the plague drive.
System. I know this.
Yeah, she finds the plague drive. And she's like, okay, this deletes stuff. But Al Pacino had physically not only deleted the hard drive, but he removed it and threw it in the ocean.
And he corrupted the file.
Yes. And she's just like, she's pressing a button and, like, Simone just reappears on the screen.
Yeah. Like, how's that fucking happen?
Like,
movie magic.
It seems like plague exists so that can't happen.
Yeah. Like, if you corrupt a file, you can't uncorrupt it.
If you corrupt a file and then take the corrupted file out of the computer physically.
Yeah.
And throw it in the ocean. You should not be able to get that back.
Yeah, no.
But she somehow figures out a way how to.
Whatever. But Simone comes back.
Yeah, Simone comes back, and then they make, like, a video of her holding her newspaper announcement of her death and reveal she's still alive.
Can I tell you a fucked up story?
Yes.
Do you know the serial killer Israel Keyes?
No.
This is a real story of a guy who kidnapped a woman, murdered her. But before people knew she was murdered, she was just missing for a while. There was a whole thing about it. And there were some of these ransom notes going into the police.
Yeah.
And they're like, if you don't pay me so much money, I will kill this person. And they're like, well, we need proof of life. And so he sends a photo of her holding up the newspaper that says, like, the date and her missing.
Yeah.
So they're thinking, oh my God, like, she's still alive. So they pay the ransom, all this stuff. Here's the thing. They find her that she's dead, that she's been dead for a while. And that what he did was that he, like, killed her in, like, a shed, and it was very cold at this time of year. So her body's, like, in rigor mortis.
Yeah.
He, like, staples open her eyes, does some makeup to make her look just fine.
This is now a true crime podcast.
And like poses her holding the newspaper.
It's fucked up.
That's all I want to say.
Yeah. Simone does that too.
Simone does that too. Except she's actually alive.
Pacino's exonerated.
Yeah. And so he gets picked up by...
That was just chilling what you just unveiled upon us. It was chilling information.
Yeah.
The listener in their car is chilled.
Israel Keyes, I mean, don't look up the serial killer, look up the victims, but just the very prolific serial killer.
Yeah.
Did a lot of fucked up shit. So anyway, Catherine Keeler picks him up.
Yeah.
And then they just kind of make the arrangement of so Simone's with us now.
Yeah.
And like, we're just going to live with Simone.
Here's the thing. They could have he doesn't want to. They can't go public now because, like, he'll get arrested for fraud.
Yeah.
Because she's an AI.
Yeah.
And so they decide that they're just going to have to continue the charade.
Yeah.
And so, like, he and Simone enter a public relationship and have a baby together.
Yeah.
Also an AI.
Who's also an AI. The final image of the movie is actually really good. Because you see, it's like she's in this, like, decorated house sitting on a couch. And she's holding... And the camera zooms out and you find she's holding a baby.
Yeah.
Then it zooms out anymore and you see Al Pacino sitting next to her.
And then Simone decides to enter politics. And that's how the movie ends.
Oh, I totally missed that
part. She's like, I'm going to get into politics.
Oh, I totally missed that part. Yeah. I did not register that.
It was set up for Sim 2.
Yeah. No, the final image that stuck with me was like, then it cuts away from that. And you just see like Al Pacino sitting on a couch by himself.
Yeah, and a green screen.
And it lingers on the image for a while. I like that.
It's like a fun final image.
Yeah, it's a fun final image.
He's like a man who's fully trapped himself in this artificial reality.
Yeah.
Fun.
And that's Simone.
Yeah, that is Simone.
Sim 1. Simulation 1.
Fun movie.
Fun, yes. Gentleman 6.
Yeah, I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Gentleman 6.
I enjoyed it too. It didn't go into all the subject matter that I would have liked for it to.
It's not nearly as interesting as it thinks it is or wants to be.
Yeah.
But overall, it is a pretty successful comedy.
Surprised somebody like today hasn't made like a movie about like AI actors.
Yeah. I'm sure it's coming.
I'm sure,
especially
it's
after the SAG strikes.
Yeah, I'm sure it's coming too. It's just I'm surprised it's taken us so long to like think of that concept.
Mm-hmm.
I'm
gonna remake Simone. I'm gonna go to Sim New Line 2. Cinema. Make Sim 2.
Sim 2.
Get Pacino back. My eyes see Oppenheimer. You and I, though, kind of on an island overall, having a mostly positive thought in this movie. This movie's a huge flop.
Yeah.
Opens at number 9.
Fuck.
Makes $19 million off of its $10 million budget.
What's it going up against? in 2002?
Let me find out what its opening weekend was.
Two Towers.
No, it opened August 23rd, it looks like. Yada, yada, yada. Da, 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 da. Domestic weekend. It opens against Triple X and Signs.
Okay.
Spy Kids 2, My okay. Big Fat Greek Wedding.
Okay.
It's getting crushed by Big Fat Greek Wedding. Yeah. Austin Powers and Goldmember.
Did you mean that to be as funny as a joke as you meant for it? It's getting yeah. crushed under My Big Fat Greek.
Well, Stuart, do you know the story with My Big Fat Greek Wedding?
No.
It kind of opens pretty low, and then it like just remains in the top five at the box office for like months. It's actually, it makes more money week after week because people should be like, go see this movie. It's so funny.
Yeah.
It makes an obscene amount of money.
Hmm. But Spy Kids 2, Triple X, and what was the other big one you mentioned?
I said Austin Powers and Goldmember.
Okay.
Okay, My Big Fat Greek Wedding shot for $5 million. Very small budget.
Yeah.
It makes $368.7 million.
Oh my fucking God.
One of the most profitable movies ever made.
Wow.
Just in terms of multiplier.
Yeah. Holy shit.
Just every weekend, it just made more and more money.
Yeah.
Will never happen again.
No. But yeah, this Simone flops.
Yeah, Simone big flop.
And it gets like mid reviews, right?
Yeah, people are mostly just like, the satire doesn't really have much bite, but it's like kind of enjoyable is the general consensus. Roger Ebert says the movie has sitcom simplicity.
Yeah.
He wants to edge it in the direction of a Hollywood comedy, but the satire is not sharp enough and the characters, including the ex-wife, are too routine. Which everyone basically has the same thought we did, is that it's like, it has a really interesting premise that overall just is content to be like a milquetoast comedy. Which at the end of the day, I'm not going to be too mean to. Because, like, if you provide me with, like, a milquetoast comedy, it's kind of funny. Like, yeah, I'll watch it. It's fine.
Yeah.
But it is ultimately, I think, wasted potential of a movie.
Yeah, I agree.
And it's a bummer for Winona that, like, even at the stage where she's at, she can't get, like, fifth-billed roles in good movies.
Yeah, she's getting fifth-billed roles in mediocre movies.
Yeah, in a movie that, like, nobody sees.
Yeah.
That's where she's at. So, like, ultimately, Simone just kind of a meh. Just like a,
yeah,
just another lost to time movie that we've covered on the show.
I mean, I'm glad I watched it.
Yeah,
but yeah, we were looking forward to watching this for.
I thought there was going to be. We still had a good chat about AI and everything, but I overall thought that there would be more to this movie to discuss.
Yeah,
instead of just this kind of summarizing a movie where Al Pacino just runs around like, oh my god, it's an AI.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of all I have to say about this movie.
I pretty much reached the end of my thoughts on it. So,
yeah. So,
all right.
Yeah. Well, in that case, thank you guys for listening to this episode on Simone. We hope you enjoyed it. Hope you had a good chat. Make sure to tune in next week for an episode on Mr. Deeds.
Mr. Deeds.
The last movie of this era of Winona that we're talking about. It's the last movie that comes out before her shoplifting allegations. And kind of kickstarts into a new era of Winona. But, you know, Mr. Deeds is kind of the end of what we're calling the I don't know what we're going to call this era, but, like, the overarching era.
I think dramatic explorations.
Yeah, dramatic explorations, like her A-list run.
Yeah.
So tune in for that one. It'll be a fun one. In the meantime, please remember to rate, review, and subscribe on every platform you're listening on. As a reminder, we're available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, YouTube, Amazon Music, any place where you listen to a podcast, we're probably there. Pop into our Reddit, r/Trollting, at Trollting Pod, Twitter, Instagram, Blue Sky Threads, trolltingpodcast@gmail.com. Find me on Twitter at Jeff W. Sweeney. You know, special thanks as always to Becca Figure, the graphic design, and Michael Van Bodegum Smith for the theme music. Have a great week, folks, and see you next week for Mr. Deeds.